guys. So today's episode is going to be about Quiet on the Set. This is one of four from the HBO docuseries that came out while I was on spring break. So I sat down and I watched all those and I made notes. Before I jump into it, I want to do just kind of a little bit of discussion about the response from various people in regards to this docuseries, because I feel that there is something that needs to be said about these responses, and I also want to explain why I decided to do this series on my podcast. So I grew up watching Nickelodeon. I grew up, in fact, watching Drake Bell on Nickelodeon. Drake Bell was one of my favorite human beings to watch. So watching this documentary is a little hard for me, I'm going to be honest, because I have always loved Drake Bell. And we'll get into him like a little bit later in the other episodes. But yeah, and you know, I watched Zoe 101. I watched, you know, just various different Dance Gender shows. I loved Amanda Bynes. Like, Amanda Bynes was my absolute favorite actress in the world. And, you know, I see where a lot of things could have, you know, gravely affected various people. Now, I will say that the docuseries does talk about Amanda. It does talk about other child actors. It talks about what happened to Drake Bell. Amanda Bynes did not sit for an interview. So anything else that was not in this docuseries that's not documented is speculation. Because there has been a lot of calls for Amanda to come out and speak, and I don't feel that that's fair to her. She's trying to get her life back on track, and when she's ready, if she's ever ready to talk about it, then she can talk about it. I personally would love to hear from Amanda, just to hear, like, her version of events and her experience with Dan, since they were so close. Like, the documentary states, we'll talk about that in a little bit in the first episode. But I know that I'm not owed that conversation, and I'm not owed what happened. I wish her nothing but healing. I hope that she can get to a place of healing for herself. And maybe one day speak, maybe go quietly off into the sunset. Is totally fine how she chooses to deal with what happened to her. We don't know what happened, and I know that there is a Twitter that was once hers that did come out with things, but again, we weren't present. The reason why I'm addressing that first is because I feel like there's been a lot of calls to make Amanda speak, and I don't think that's fair. And there's been calls for a lot of people to speak. Some have spoken that I'm a little disappointed in, but we're not gonna go there. Right now, we'll probably go there at the end of the episode, but there's been a lot of calls for people to speak, and I don't think that's entirely fair of them to call for people to speak. Nobody should feel forced to share what happened to them. Whether it was good or bad, nobody should be forced to talk about it. And I understand that the conversation is like, well, silence is complicity. Dan Schneider has not made any new shows for Nickelodeon, as far as I'm concerned. He is trying to make a comeback. We are going to talk about Dan's response. I just don't know if I'm going to do it in this episode or the next episode, because there's a lot to talk about in these four episodes, which is why I broke them down into four episodes. So there's that. The second thing I want to talk about is kind of, you know what, actually, I lied. We're going to talk about the response from two people. Chris Massey went on a podcast and talked about how this wasn't his experience on Nickelodeon. And, you know, just kind of made a lot of excuses for a lot of things and kind of just, like, to me, brushed it under the rug after this documentary came out. And I just want to say, in regards to Chris Massey, I'm not going to accuse him of signing an NDA or accepting hush money or anything like that. Like, there's a lot of speculation that he did so online. I'm not going to speculate because I don't know Chris Massey. But what I am going to say is two things can be true at the same time. Somebody could have been abused by Dan Schneider and somebody could have had an amazing relationship with Dan. Like, if you even, like, look at the, we're going to talk about it, but even, like, Drake Bell's situation, his issue, what happened to him didn't happen because of Dan. It happened because of somebody else, but Dan was good to him. Like, two things can be true at the same time. Just because one's not something you want to hear or one makes you uncomfortable doesn't mean that it's not true. And I just also wanted to address Matthew Underwood's statement from Zoe 101 because when I read this, like, it truly broke my heart, and I'm going to pull it up so it's like a direct quote from him because I don't want to mess any of this up. I want to be respectful as I can to Matthew. I want to say that Matthew, if you're listening to this, you should not have had to come out and make this statement. Nobody should have been forcing you, and I hope you don't feel forced to disclose what happened to you. It's a horrible thing, and that's all I'm going to say on that. But I want to address a couple things in here that you say, and this is not me being hurtful to you or harmful to you. I just feel like you walked away from Hollywood, so I feel like you understand a little bit. So he starts off by saying, I know many folks want me to respond to the Quiet On Set documentary. I'm going to share something with you that I've never have talked about publicly, as it's honestly none of your business anyway. And I want to be clear that it's none of our business what happened to any of them. Just because they were child actors, just because they're celebrities, does not mean that we owe them anything, that they owe us anything. When I was 12 years old, I was groomed and molested by my best friend's stepfather. I lost that best friend and I'd ever had because I couldn't spend any time with him without feeling the personal disgust and betrayal brought on by a man I trusted as a father to me. When I was 19, I was sexually harassed and then assaulted by an agent at the time who had spent a decent amount of time building my trust with me as a friend and a mentor. Again, my trust was betrayed and my image, self-image crushed. I reported him to the agency and he has been fired. Although he is still active in the industry, this experience provoked my move away from LA and ended my pursuit in acting. I felt it was important. That's where I want to address. These people still have jobs. These people are still working on sets. They are being allowed to continue as business as usual. As you know, Drake said in a panel from Quiet on the Set that, you know, these people still have jobs. Like, it's a whole, like, network protecting each other. And that's my issue. Like, why are we still giving people that we know are harmful to children jobs? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. Why am I telling you this? Well, lately my people have been blowing up my email. Many people have been blowing up my email telling me they hope me and my mom die and that we burn in hell. I'm being called a pedophile defender and all that jazz. I spent many years rebuilding my self-image and those hateful words have little effect on me today. But I imagine many of my friends in the business are being equally harassed if they aren't joining the course. So I'm sharing this with hope that some of you recognize that just because a person doesn't shout from the rooftops that pedophiles are bad or that people can suck, that does not mean they don't have their own reasons for staying silent, good reasons and personal reasons. And again, this is important. Like, we should not be forcing anyone to come out and tell us what happened to them. Nobody should feel forced to. And the fact that he was being harassed and that potentially more people are being harassed to share their story is truly infuriating. And I wanted to do this before we dive into the episode because I don't want anyone that's listening to my podcast going after anyone that worked with Dan Schneider and be like, you need to tell the truth. You need to tell your story. Because that's not what I'm asking for. This is a conversation about what happened. Not, let's go attack people for information. I have extreme empathy for anyone who has been taken advantage of by people they trust. I hope they will all grow to love themselves and have support from their family and friends in their journey of recovery. I also ask you all to take a few moments to consider why someone might not share their experience publicly and not immediately shame them for reserving their right to privacy. I never had a bad experience working on set of Nickelodeon, and I've never had a bad experience with Dan. I have nothing to add to the conversation that anyone would care to hear. I like to believe that the capacity to be better human beings, and Dan appears to recognize that he has been an asshole in the past. I like to believe he is fully capable of being a creator and co-worker everyone can enjoy working with. I have no expectation to work with him again. This is just me wanting good for anyone who wants to be better. So I want to talk about that because there has been a lot of talk about Dan. And I didn't feel Dan's interview was sincere. I did not feel it. I feel like he sat down with somebody who was a friend and was trying to do PR damage control because he wants back in the business. Now, I've never spent time with Dan Schneider. I've never set foot on a set of his. I don't know if he truly feels sorry or not, but that was my perception. And I would like to believe that Dan is capable of changing, but I'm having a hard time seeing that. And again, I just want to reiterate that just because Matthew Underwood didn't have a bad experience doesn't mean that the bad experiences talked about in the documentary are not true. Like, both can be true. There's been a lot of people that have commented on Alexis Nicholas's YouTube, and I've been kind of quiet about that, but they've talked about how, like, no one else has come out and corroborated that they had the same experience. Like, what do you think the documentary states? Like, there are people who have had issues with Dan, and there are people who have not had issues with Dan. Both can be true. So please take a moment to consider that some people might not be making statements because talking about this kind of thing brings up memories and emotions that are difficult to deal with. They have every right to be silent, and I can't believe I have to say this, but of course, I don't fucking support pedophiles. Please stop wishing death upon my family, and please consider reconsider harassing other actors who wish to maintain their privacy. You never know who has already been a victim of the hell you're wishing upon them. So, again, they do not owe us their stories. I think the reason that a lot of people are attacking, or I don't want to use the word attack, but like bombarding people who used to work for Dan just because there's been such a, like, some people have had great experiences, some people have had horrible experiences, and I think people are trying to figure out, like, what exactly is Dan, and, like, what did he know, what didn't he know, and I think that's why there's a lot of speculation. So I wanted to talk about those two things before we jump into my notes for episode one. I am going to put just trigger warnings in all of these episodes because I feel it's important that we do that. And I have notes for all four episodes, and I'm going to try not to get on tangents, but I have a hard time not doing so, so I apologize. So basically, Dan Schneider, for those of you who don't know, was a creator of shows on Nickelodeon. He pretty much did 20 years of entertainment for Nickelodeon. He did All That, he did Amanda Bynes, he did Zoe 101, he did Sam and Cat, he did Victorious. If I'm forgetting anything, I apologize, but I'm trying to do this from memory. And kind of what brought this conversation about Dan Schneider to the forefront was that in 2017, there was kind of a lot of videos circulating on the internet of Dan's shows and scenes that, like, reference pornography in children's shows. So that's kind of how this conversation about Dan Schneider began. So All That was supposed to be a Saturday Night Live for kids. I remember watching it. I was obsessed with it. I loved Amanda. I loved Drake. Like, those were the two. I also loved a few of the other ones as well. Like, there was multiple people that I loved watching on it. I just thought it was great. Acting was never something I wanted to do, but I thought it was really, really cool to, like, see just kids having fun. I mean, I don't know how else to word this. I'm trying to just be, Dan in the beginning to most of the cast and most of the, friends and people on the show, like, he just seemed to be funny and, you know, all those things. And, you know, this is when they bring up, like, there was a lot of cum shots in his stuff, which at the time that I was watching this, I didn't see it through the lens of this is a cum shot. I didn't necessarily think it was funny. I'm not one that finds things, like, things that are, like, gross funny. You know, in that regard, I just don't. I didn't find, like, the whole, like, having one of the kids, which we talk about here, being licked with peanut butter was funny by dogs. Like, I didn't find the kind of stuff funny. I mostly watched for Amanda. That was, like, the main reason. But I thought it was interesting that, and my notes are kind of all over the place, so I'm trying to, like, just keep them together, because this episode talks about Dan and then moves into Amanda and Dan, and that's kind of where I want to focus this episode, just because there was a lot of talk about what transpired with them and Nickelodeon's handling of such things as this. So I just feel like it was important to have this convert, like, whole thing. So there was one actress named Katrina, and she talks about how she was, you know, bigger. So I'm going to, like, be respectful, because if anyone has an eating disorder like I do, I don't want to trigger you. But she was basically talking about how, like, she was getting fat and she was basically the fat one. And then she talks about how when she hit puberty, because originally she was Amanda for all intents and purposes. Like, she was going to get her own show. She was the lead on all of that. Like, so that's kind of, and then when she went through puberty, it was an issue. And I thought it was important to note that she was the one that really pushed Dan and them to look at Amanda. Katrina told them they needed to see Amanda at the Laugh Shack. And I thought that was important because, you know, we talk a lot about peer pressure and competition when we talk about child stars. And I thought that was really cool of Katrina. Like, even though she wanted her own show, she saw the talent in Amanda and she threw Amanda a lifeline to get into this business. Now, if that lifeline was damaging or not, I am not a psychologist. I'm not a parent in that equation, so I don't know if that was necessarily the best move for Amanda. And it stated that Dan knew Amanda was a star. I thought it was interesting that, because at the time I didn't really think about it, but now that I'm, like, seeing some of her scenes now, I'm like, Amanda definitely was more of a physical comedy person, which might be why I enjoyed it and laughed at a lot of her stuff that she did, because I just thought it was, like, very, you know, funny in that regard. And so that was, like, something that was very interesting. I loved the Amanda Show and I loved Amanda on all that. I'm not going to lie and say that I didn't, because that wouldn't be necessarily true. Now, were the jokes appropriate looking at it now? Some of them were probably not. But I didn't really... Not that I didn't have, like, strict rules, I was always kind of just, like, when it came to TV and it came to, like, appropriateness in my house and about television, like, there was always an open dialogue and an open conversation, so wasn't necessarily, you know, all the things, so, yeah, okay. I'm trying not to ramble. Okay, so Dan knew that Amanda would be a star, and I thought that was important to note that Dan noticed right away that she would be a star. I think that through all of Dan's faults, his ability to spot talent wasn't necessarily a bad thing. I think what he chose to do with that talent may not have been appropriate when focusing the audience towards children. Just my opinion there. So, and then it talks about how there were times that Amanda would not be in the schoolroom, but be with Dan writing and pitching ideas. A lot of them stated how it was very clear that Amanda was the favorite, which I thought was interesting, just because there was a lot of kids on the show, and why did Dan focus so much on Amanda? Like, from watching this documentary, I have a lot of questions, especially this episode, about Amanda and Dan's relationship, and I don't know if Dan would ever tell us the truth. And I don't know if Amanda's in a place mental health wise that she can tell that she can relive this. I'm not asking Amanda to relive this in any way, shape, or form. She was literally my favorite actress, and it's really, really hard to watch this documentary and hear these things that went on with Dan and see how her life just took such a spiral. So I'm the first person that's going to defend Amanda and say, you don't have to speak. But I also can acknowledge that from this documentary and from the people that were there at the time, I can't help but have questions about what exactly Dan's intentions were with Amanda and what went on behind closed doors. So that's kind of just my thing about it. But I do think it was interesting that there was times that Amanda was supposed to be in the schoolroom and that she was having like writing sessions and pitching ideas with Dan, I feel like is an important part of this as well. I know I already said it, but I feel like it's just necessary to keep having this conversation about it. I do also think that it's interesting to note that all of the parents that were present, minus like Drake's dad, because he was present a lot and then he wasn't, found it interesting that they all just kind of tried to stay out of the way and not ruffle too many feathers and not really, you know, cause a scene. And I thought that was interesting because of the fact that Amanda's parents were very hands-on, especially her dad. And I also think it's important to note that her dad put a lot of pressure on her and treated like a wind-up doll, one of them said. And I think that's important to note because I don't think people realize that there is another layer when it comes to Amanda Bynes. A lot of this has come out in recent years. I didn't know this at the time, but she was basically the breadwinner for her family. And I feel that that's like an important part of this conversation that we're missing from this. So I'm just going to give my opinion whether anything happened with Dan or Amanda or not. I feel that Amanda was in such a pressure situation in this, and that when Dan was throwing her a lifeline of writing sessions and pitch ideas, it's something that she appeared to enjoy at the time. So I think that that's important because, you know, children are supposed to be taken care of by their parents and financially provided for by their parents, not the other way around. So that adds another layer for the Amanda situation. And, you know, it's come out years later that, like, they were spending her money. So, like, can we blame her necessarily for where she has found herself now? I also think that it's important to note that, you know, they were spending her money and then they put her under a conservatorship. Like, if you're already spending her money and she needs mental health, why are you putting her under a conservatorship to control something you're already controlling? Like, that to me doesn't make sense. But again, I'm just speculating and I'm trying not to get on tangents. I'm sorry. So I also think it's important to note that Dan and her father planned her entire career and handcrafted Amanda's career, which I feel is another layer to this. I really feel like her dad saw his cash cow and just kept pushing her. And he may have noticed something wasn't right with Dan, but ignored it because his child was making a ton of money. Again, I wasn't present in the room. I wasn't there. But from watching this documentary, that's kind of the vibe that I'm getting and feeling from it, whether that was the Quiet on Set's intentions or not. Okay, so now we're going to say So I also find it interesting that Katrina was being groomed to have basically an Amanda show and then never got it. So then she decided to go to college. I feel like that's really cool because I don't think we talk a lot about like how a lot of child stars don't have a plan B. And I thought that was really cool that she mentioned that. And I find it interesting that a year later, she heard about the Amanda show. Now, Dance Genders first... with the Amanda show, that was the first time Dan Schneider's name was on a show. Like, was the first, you know, big thing. And I thought that was important because when I look at Amanda Bynes and I look at what's come out about Dan Schneider, I can't help but feel like this whole, like, Amanda Bynes fall out from, like, basically from grace or like stardom and like the way her life has taken just such a, you know, downward spiral. I can't help but like look at that and then look at the allegations that came out about Dan and then see his career fall like years later. I just can't help but think that the two things may be correlated in some way. And then this is when they talk about the female writers that were on Amanda's shows, on the Amanda show. And how they stated that it was, that one of them stated that it was the worst experience in their career. Which, to me, is interesting that they, that is the case. Just because when you think of Nickelodeon, especially as a child who grew up with it, you don't think necessarily of the adults. You think about the fact that they're working with children. But now that I've watched the documentary, I can see how that would be the case for her. They talk about how, one talks about how working with Dan was like an emotionally abusive relationship, which I feel is important because this is not the first accusation of Dan being horrible. Jeanette McCurdy's book, she talks about, well, she doesn't specifically say Dan. She says the creator, which... speculation is Dan because that's the only person that it would be. The creator of Sam and Cat was Dan. You know, he was horrible to her. So I don't see how... I can see after reading her book and after seeing this how Dan would be emotionally abusive. Now, again, I was never in the room. Now, I will say something that I found interesting after this documentary came out is that there's videos circulating of Jerry Trainer like joking with Dan but like being like super assertive and putting himself between the kids. So there were adults that saw what was going on with Dan and did insert themselves in there to try and protect children. So I don't think that all of the adults in Hollywood are horrible people. I just feel there's a lot of adults willing to turn a blind eye for money, fame, and that's with everything across the board, whether it be children, whether it be some of the stuff that goes on in Hollywood. So I just want to make that clear. I also thought that it was interesting that at the time, the two women were splitting a salary. So like a show that was making so much money was splitting the salary of one writer with two females. How is that legal? And one writer brought up that Dan thought women didn't think women were funny. That is very sexist to me. Like, you don't necessarily have to agree with women, but you don't have to, like, I don't know. That comment just rubbed me the wrong way. Dan said, and I also found it interesting that Dan was in the writing room every time there was writing, just because I didn't usually think producers or directors were really in the writing room. Now, again, I'm not famous, so I'm just assuming that they were never. I also think it's interesting to note that he likes to play pranks and jokes at first. and that at first they thought it was funny and then it would become more degrading. I felt that was important to note because there's a difference between having fun and playing pranks and playing jokes and then just being a horrible human being. So that was an issue as well. So then this talks about, like, the kid that Nickelodeon was a mini Hollywood for kids, which I feel is important because a lot of us grew up with Nickelodeon. A lot of us did view them as, like, the thing to be. So I definitely think that was an important piece to address, and that he came up and that Nickelodeon had the kids' version of the Oscars, which was the Kids' Choice Awards, which we all know. I thought it was interesting to note that Amanda made Dan laugh. And the reason why that's important is because allegedly not many people made him laugh. So if his jokes were inappropriate and Amanda made him laugh, like, what was she saying to make him laugh? Like, that's kind of an eh for me. I will say that Amanda and Dan, according to the documentary, were close physically, which any time in my mind that an adult is physically close to a child that is not a parent and that is doing something that might look inappropriate is an issue. So that's kind of all I'm gonna say of that thing. I will say that there's also a video of Amanda sitting in a hot tub with Dan, and Dan says it was his idea. And, like, I saw it before when I was a child, and, like, to me it really, at the time, didn't raise a red flag. But now as an adult, I'm like, why is a grown man in a hot tub with a child who's 13? And she's in a bathing suit, but he's fully clothed? Like, it's weird to me, okay? Around this time, around as Amanda grows up and as Amanda begins to, you know, see things or do things, and she starts to want to, like, change her career from, like, being a kid to an adult, things start to take a turn for the worse. And this is also around the time that Dan accuses a writer of conspiring against the company. I also think it's important to note that Dan is also around this time watching pornography and asking for massages. Like, you know, this is where they talk about Dan's behavior before they discuss what goes on with Amanda and Dan. You know, Amanda tried to get, like, they don't actually fully get into it yet till episode 2. Sorry. So, like, this is where things start to, like, really turn for Amanda and Dan, is during kind of the first episode of Quiet on the Set. They kind of, like, talk about Dan's behavior and Dan's thing, and then kind of just, like, the start of Amanda and Dan's, like, rift, I guess you could say. So then one of the writers called the writers' girls about guild about sharing a salary, and she was told that this is not correct. Dan yelled a lot. He was kind of like a tornado when he was on set. Like, you just never knew what you were going to get from the man. Chrissy, who was one of the writers, got fired for doing something personal during the show season, which was a no, which I thought was interesting that, like, he didn't allow his writers or people to do anything personal during the show. Like, how is that okay? And then Jenny, who was another writer, said for season 2, she was asked to work for free. He had a meeting with all the male writers and excluded her. Like, the behavior started to change with Jenny. Jenny then sues Dan. She called Chrissy. Chrissy wrote a letter on her behalf. Her lawyer files complaints, a hostile work environment, gender discrimination, harassment, and she knew it was the end of her career and it never stopped. Nothing came from that, and that's kind of where they end the first episode. Nothing came from those, you know, lawsuits, conversations, and I think that's interesting to note here before I record episode 1, season 2, that nothing really changed from there, because And I also feel like that was a lot, had a lot to do with the times. There was a lot of issues with women in work, and I feel that we've just now kind of gotten to a place of like semi-normalcy in that regard. So that is episode one, season two. I mean, episode one, season one of the Quiet on the Set docuseries. This one was more about, like, Dan's behavior and, like, the start of Amanda's relationship and his growth with Nickelodeon. And the next episode really talks about the things that are more of a trigger warning. So I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. I'm going to end this with saying just kind of one last time, anyone that's listening to this that is a celebrity, was a celebrity, and worked for Dan Schneider, you do not owe us anything. You do not owe us your story. You do not owe us anything. You do not have to speak if you don't want to speak. And again, I will say that two things can be true at the same time. Dan can be great to somebody and then horrible to somebody else. It is absolutely okay. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and I will see you all for episode two. I am going to record episode two right now, so that way I have two episodes ready to go and uploaded for the week. So I will see you guys very soon, and have a great rest of your day.